You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. Happy Friday. We made it. Another week in the books. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, there was a bit of local reporting this week that caught my attention. One of the reasons that I have been so apoplectic about the MAGA regime's approach to deportations, the deprivation of due process, as well as their threats to, quote, suspend habeas corpus as if that's something that the president can do by himself, it's not. The reason that this concerns me so deeply is that mistakes get made by government. I mean, who out there listening to my voice right now would say, well, government, no. I completely trust government to never make any mistakes at all, ever. And if we know that government makes mistakes, or maybe even intentionally might put out some information that's not entirely true, you know, the swamp, what happens when that intentional misinformation put out by the government or just a mistake results in someone who is here legally and is eligible to be here legally, not yet a citizen, but a legal non-citizen resident of the United States, is disappeared in the middle of the night? What happens if that misinformation gets out there and folks that believe in the MAGA regime start threatening someone's life based on that misinformation? Well, something along these lines just went down right here in our state over the past couple of weeks. Eva Wen of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel covered it, broke this story, which has now been picked up nationally. First of all, Eva, congratulations on the coverage. It's excellent. It's incredibly important for us to understand. Take us through the basic facts of this story.
Thank you for having me. Yes, so the Department of Homeland Security, they issued a statement that accused a man in Milwaukee, a Mexican immigrant who's currently undocumented, of writing a letter threatening to assassinate President Donald Trump. His lawyers and people who know him say it is not possible because he does not speak English and has very limited writing skills, even in Spanish, which is his first language. And later on, we saw a CNN report citing a senior law enforcement official that investigators have already decided that this man, Ramon Morales Reyes, is not the author of the letter. And since the statement by the Department of Homeland Security was issued, the family has been receiving death threats from social media and has been under a tremendous amount of stress. So his lawyers and advocates now are urging the Department of Homeland Security to issue a correction so that Morales Reyes' name would be cleared.
This is interesting. He was also in the process of applying for a U visa. Tell us what a U visa is and why that's relevant in this case.
Yes. So a U visa is essentially a visa that would be issued, if you're approved, to victims of certain crimes that are willing to assist in law enforcement investigations of the crime. And in this case, he was a victim of the crime and also has assisted law enforcement in prosecuting this case. His U visa is currently under, he's still applying in the process of applying. So he has not gotten the U visa yet. But yes, that's something that has been going on as well.
So I want to summarize what has occurred here. A man who is the victim of a crime, who is here undocumented, he does not have legal status, reported the crime, was cooperating with law enforcement in their prosecution and investigation of the crime. As he became known to law enforcement as a victim of the crime, the federal, which again, that's under state law, that those are local law enforcement, that's not federal law enforcement, state law-based crime. He's cooperating with law enforcement. Federal immigration officials become aware, okay, we know who this guy is and where he is. He's cooperating with this investigation. They decide, someone within the Department of Homeland Security decides to issue a statement in advance, apparently, of his getting arrested, picked up by immigration officials, that accuse him of threatening the president's life, except at the time they made the statement, other officials within DHS already knew that he didn't author this threat letter to the president, that was not true. The statement went out. His family's now under threat, concerned for their well-being. This man, who was the victim of a crime, though here did not have legal status, is now sitting in the Dodge County Detention Center in Juneau, Wisconsin. His family's receiving threats, and DHS has to date refused to correct the public record that, in fact, this guy didn't send this threat to Donald Trump. Please correct any of that if I've gotten it wrong, Eva.
Well, this man, Ramon Morales Reyes, he was arrested on Thursday, May 22nd. And according to DHS, the letter was received on May 21st. And they issued the statement six days later. So they issued the statement on the 28th saying, you know, he wrote this letter. Yes. So that's...
So the correction is to the timeline. The letter was received May 21st. This man, who at the time was cooperating in law enforcement as the victim of a crime being investigated by local and state law enforcement officials, he was then arrested May 22nd by federal law enforcement. He's being detained in a state correctional facility. And on May 28th, federal officials, though officials within Homeland Security knew the statement to be false, issued a statement that this guy threatened the life of the president of the United States. Eva, where does it stand? Have we had any updates? I know you published this. It was late yesterday afternoon when this came out. Has there been any follow-up? Has DHS today issued any corrective statement? Has there been any response at all from DHS?
Not to my knowledge, no. Yesterday, I asked questions to DHS about how they identified this letter as being from the person they arrested, Ramon Morales Reyes. And they did not directly answer that question and said in the process of investigating this matter, they found out that Ramon Morales Reyes was here undocumented and had a criminal record, and that's why they took him into custody.
Folks, that is Eva Nguyen, reporter from the Journal Sentinel. Thank you so very much, Eva, for bringing this important story to all of our listeners here at Civic Media. I am going to now take phone calls and text messages on this because I want to make a couple of points. And Eva, you can stick around and chime in when you want, or you can get going. I know you've been very busy with this story. Here's what's concerning to me. Not unlike what happened with Mr. Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the federal government seems to be inventing garbage to say about people after they have been arrested with deportations pending. Here's what else concerns me about this particular case. The man was a victim of a crime. He reported it, was cooperating with investigators. And but for his being a victim of a crime and cooperating with law enforcement, which is what helps keep our local community safe, most of us, the crimes that occur, those are state law crimes, not federal crimes. People cooperating with law enforcement when they're victims, that is how we secure our communities and keep our communities safe. He's cooperating with law enforcement, but for all of those things that would have occurred, immigration officials wouldn't have known where he is or that he was here illegally. So we have a case in point now where an individual was doing what all local law enforcement always hope people do, and that is report crimes and cooperate with your local police department in the investigation of that crime. And because he did the right thing there, he's now sitting behind bars. His family is under threat because DHS lied about him and refuses to correct that lie, that mistake. And now we have, hey, are they going to wait before they deport him so that they can finish the investigation and find out who committed this crime? I mean, this case has all of these trappings of these very things that we have been concerned about when we look at this intersection of frankly, state and local law enforcement and the immediate needs of keeping our communities safe and federal immigration enforcement. This is part of that tension which, by the way, everybody, is what the 10th Amendment is about, and the fact that the federal government cannot usurp the powers of local government to help enforce federal immigration law. Eva, have you heard anything from advocacy groups or this man's attorneys about these fundamental issues, these points of tension? We keep our communities safe through the application of state criminal statutes and local law enforcement. If people are afraid they're going to be deported if they report crimes, our communities will be less safe. Are advocacy groups concerned about this?
Yes, advocacy groups and lawyers are definitely saying that this will have a chilling effect on crime reporting in the community. And, they are also very concerned that DHS has not issued a correction and the family is still under threat right now.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Eva Nguyen. And folks, I have just the sound for you, Jacob. Do we have Senator Joni Ernst? This is what we're talking about. It is the callousness of many federal officials, including DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, to the vulnerabilities of immigrant populations. They are more frequently victims of crimes than citizens are. They're less likely, not more likely, to report those crimes if they may face and fear deportation. Again, do we care about people or not? Do we care about the rule of law or not? Senator Joni Ernst today answered that question emphatically, very clearly, without stuttering one little bit, in my opinion, in a town hall that she faced. Do we have time for the sound, Jacob? Let's take a listen. Now, this is in the context of Medicaid, and I want to be clear here. There are very, 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 very limited exceptions, and they're not even really exceptions. The baseline rule is that people who are here illegally are not eligible for Medicaid. You sometimes have mixed families where the kids may be eligible, even if a parent is not, and sometimes there can be some confusion. Listen to what Joni Ernst had to say in response to concerns about people being thrown off Medicaid.
When you are arguing about illegals that are receiving Medicaid benefits, 1.4 million, they are not eligible, so they will be coming off. So we all are going to die. So for heaven's sakes.
We're all going to die, so screw people that might get booted off Medicaid. I'm going to pick up that train. We're going to listen to that sound again on the other side, because the link here is this. While this man unfairly incorrectly smeared by the Department of Homeland Security is subject to deportation, that process is being applied to him only because he stepped up and did the thing we want everyone in our communities to do, and that is report crimes and cooperate with law enforcement. The response of DHS and the federal government is, we don't care. We don't care if it makes communities less safe if we do what we're doing, just like Senator Joni Ernst doesn't care if people die because we rip families away from their Medicaid coverage. We pick up the discussion on the other side. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. The idea that the Department of Homeland Security would put out a statement about someone that is potentially subject to deportation that has now put that man's life and his family's life at risk, knowing that their statement was incorrect. What happened here is a man who is validly subject to deportation was the victim of a crime. Because he was a victim of a crime, reported it, and was cooperating with law enforcement, federal immigration officials identified him as someone subject to deportation. The man does have a criminal record, again, nonetheless, a victim of a crime. Now, what federal investigators concluded was that likely someone that committed this crime against this man sent a bogus death threat letter so that this guy would get deported before he was able to testify in state court against the people who committed this crime against him, right? That's what they figured out. Kristi Noem and the rest of the people at DHS, they don't care. Put the letter out anyways. They have yet to retract it, even though their own investigators are saying, nope, this guy didn't write it. That's not okay. Likewise, this little exchange at a town hall yesterday between angry constituents and Senator Joni Ernst is also not okay. And to be clear here, she is lying when she says 1.4 people who are here illegally receive Medicaid. That is not a fact. That is untrue. It is a lie. But Joni Ernst don't care, just like Kristi Noem don't care, and Donald Trump don't care, and they don't care if they're lying to you. But the ugly truth came out of Joni Ernst's mouth. Let's take a listen again.
When you are arguing about illegals that are receiving Medicaid benefits, 1.4 million, they are not eligible, so they will be coming off. So we all are going to die. So
For heaven's sakes, we're all going to die. So let the federal government take Medicaid away from people. 14 million people. She's talking about 1.4. Again, that's a lie. It's not 1.4 people who are here illegally receiving Medicaid. That's not true. If you're here illegally, you are not qualified to receive Medicaid. It gets complicated if someone who's here illegally marries a citizen, has perhaps an asylum petition pending, or has a kid with a citizen. And the kid is now a citizen, and the kid qualifies for Medicaid. So yeah, some of it's complicated. But the idea that even if on the margin, some people who are not eligible for Medicaid are receiving Medicaid, the question would be, what's the actual freaking number? And go audit that and kick those people off. You don't completely gut Medicaid simply because you've got some people that need to be audited and removed from it. You don't screw the other 13 million, even if you assume that Joni Ernst is right about the 1.4, which she's not. You don't screw the 12.6 other million people that are going to lose Medicaid who are eligible for Medicaid because of that. But, you know, who cares? Because we're all going to die anyways, Joni. If she believes that, here's what I'd like Senator Ernst to do. Give up your health insurance for the rest of your life, Senator. Maybe take up smoking. I don't know. I'm being glib. I don't really mean that. It's all a little bit much. And in other news that also is irking me to the nth degree, as a follow-on to my conversation in hour one with former U.S. Attorney James Santel about the corruption, the out-and-out corruption that is happening in the Donald Trump administration, we should hate corruption no matter who the president is. There's one rule that's real clear when it comes to the powers of the president, and it's you cannot tell the IRS who to audit or stop auditing because, you know, clearly that'd be some pretty significant leverage. Let's take a listen when Elizabeth Warren tried to drill down with Donald Trump's nominee to be the head of the IRS on this pretty simple point.
And I'm asking what I think is a pretty simple question. Can the president of the United States legally tell the IRS to change someone's nonprofit status?
I'm not able to answer.
You can't read these words and tell what those words say?
I can read the statute, and I did.
All right, then tell me what they mean. What does it mean to say that a person, an applicable person here, that's the president, right?
Yes.
All right. Cannot directly or indirectly, right? Tell any officer or employee, that would be you, of the Internal Revenue Service to conduct or terminate an audit or other investigation of any particular taxpayer. What part do you not understand here?
It seems to be a nonprofit. I don't see exactly what
okay,
it refers
any
to.
Any taxpayer.
And it goes on and on. The law is the president can't tell the IRS who to audit or stop auditing. Person in this context includes entities like nonprofits and, oh yeah, places like freaking Harvard. And the reason we don't allow presidents to do that is because a president could usurp the power of the IRS to punish his political enemies and to favor his supporters. That is corruption. That is the swamp. And no matter which team you root for, we should all know the things we learned in kindergarten. That's bad. It's really that simple. When we come back, we take your questions and today's segment called Ask Maggie. You can ask me anything. Submit your questions. AskMaggie@civicmedia.us. 855-752-4842. My senior producer joins me for Ask Maggie on the other side. Keep it locked. We'll be back with you in just a moment right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Friday. It's 5:30, and it is time for Ask Maggie. Welcome, everybody. Hope your week is wrapping up well. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network every Friday, because we all got to unwind just a little bit. We do a fun segment called Ask Maggie at 5:30, where my senior producer joins me and asks me, Maggie, your questions. You can submit those all week long at AskMaggie@civicmedia.us. That's an email, or you can shoot in your questions now, even 855-752-4842, 855-752-CIVIC. That is our text line. And of course, it's Free Ticket Friday. I will be dropping the Word to Win in our statewide Text to Win Brewers tickets. It's a 4-pack to the 6:40 game on Saturday, June 7th against the San Diego Padres. So don't go anywhere. I'll be dropping that word before the hour is out so you all can have some fun on Civic Media coming up one of those early weekends in June. Welcome back to the show, Jamie. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Happy Friday, by the way. You look lovely and springy today, too.
Oh, thank you. I had to dress more like an adult. Remember, everybody, you can watch us on YouTube if you want to give me some wardrobe feedback on what you like to see. Usually, you know, I've been leaning into the I do radio, so I'm going to show up in a t-shirt and jeans sort of thing. I spent a lot of years in suits and heels and pantyhose. So I lean into the jeans and t-shirts.
Radio is the whole reason I don't do pantyhose and high heels.
The whole nine.
I've spent a lot of time behind a microphone. Hey, before we get started with Ask Maggie, you know, earlier this week, we talked a little bit about the Scripps Spelling Bee, and I was very excited. I actually stayed up the other night to watch the very end of it in the finals. We do need to say a big congratulations to a Wisconsin student, Ethan Robert from New Berlin. He is 12 years old, and he actually placed 10th in the Scripps Spelling Bee. And I mean, it's a nationwide contest. That's nothing to be ashamed of, Ethan. So from one speller to another, you are amazing. Amazing stuff. So that's
I'm
very
not
cool.
quite the speller that Jamie is, Ethan, but I will say thanks for making us Wisconsin proud yet again. Yeah. Way to go. You have to be a hell of a speller to get to 10th place in the Scripps National Spelling Bee. That's awesome.
I got to be honest. I was listening to the final round the other night, and I don't consider myself to be a completely stupid human being, and I don't consider myself to be a horrible speller. I was like, what is this word that they are bringing out? And these students, like, if you watch the final, it was so awesome because the kid knew the word. He knew he knew the word, didn't have to ask for the origin, didn't have to ask for the pronunciation, and he just spelled it, and it was an incredible moment. And anytime you see kids, like, accomplish something that amazing, heck, as adults, once we accomplish something that amazing, it was really cool to see. But congratulations to Ethan. So if you're in the New Berlin area, make sure you tell Ethan and his family what an awesome kid he is. So with that, I think it's time to get to some questions. You have some good ones. All right, Jacob, we got to have that fun new intro because, well, it's one of our favorites.
It's time to get your questions answered, Wisconsin style. Welcome to Ask Maggie, a rapid-fire round from politics to pop culture. So buckle up, Buttercup. It's Ask Maggie, and we're about to take your questions at lightning speed.
That's a fun intro. I like it.
It is. I love that one.
I had to wait for the music. Plus, I have so many questions here in front of me because we've gotten a few in email. And I think where we're going to start today is right off the text line, because this is a good one. And this comes to our good friend Dave from New Berlin, as we were just talking about that. And Dave usually sends us really silly questions. It's been everything from, you know, how many dryer sheets should he use to over under on the toilet paper? And in typical Ask Angie fashion,
yes,
you have answered them all. So today's question is a little bit more serious, and this is a good one because I think this is something that a lot of people have on their mind, especially as we watch, some of the comments coming out of the Trump administration. Can the president suspend our 2026 elections? And if so, how? That is the question that we're going to start with. We're going to give her 60 seconds for this one, Jacob, whenever you're ready.
God, I wish I could say emphatically, clearly, unequivocally, no, but sadly, Dave, I cannot. And here is why. Because in the big, brutal bill, and it seems to be poised, this provision of it seems to be poised to be accepted in the Senate, they've inserted a provision that will limit Article 3 federal court's ability to issue injunctions and make findings of contempt without the party seeking that injunction and contempt ruling, without that party posting a bond. The bond, it has been in the past, depending on the number of claimants, just assumed to be, for symbolic sake, say $1 a person impacted by the potential ruling and contempt finding. Here, and I'm sorry, this one's taking me a little bit longer because the steps here are really important. If the president clearly and unconstitutionally tried to cancel the elections, say declaring martial law, God knows what else, because he's been invoking those sorts of emergency powers right and left more than any other president in American history since this guy got sworn in, he does that. Someone raises a legal challenge, goes to court, asks for an injunction, maybe goes to many courts asking for many injunctions, depending on how the Supreme Court's feeling. Maybe we got to do it in every single one of the United States' 92 individual district courts, or one court, whatever it may be. Can you imagine which plaintiff has got a dollar sitting around for every eligible voter in the country? That would be, how would you calculate what the bond would be if the president continues to ignore court orders to hold the election, right? Which is a highly time-sensitive matter. Like, if you think about printing ballots, it's not a ballot that says, who do you vote for president? It's got all of those different elections up and down federal, state, and local government. They're incredibly complicated. Usually you got to get those to the printers like a month ahead of time. I know, I've been there. I've done that. I've looked at ballots. I've had to approve ballot proofs. It is very complicated. For every ward, there's a different ballot. And we have hundreds of wards, even just within Milwaukee County. If he just refuses to abide by court orders and you're trying to get a contempt finding, but the federal judge can't make the contempt finding because this laid down MAGA regime Congress, who refuses to abide by its constitutional oaths to actually be a check and a balance on the Article 2 power, the president's power, what the hell happens? So I wish I could say absolutely not. Trump won. I would have said absolutely not. We didn't move the election during COVID. Did we? But we have gone through the looking glass. We're not just on the precipice anymore. We've gone through the looking glass. There have been repeated federal courts over the last 2 weeks alone that have increasingly found with greater and greater specificity and alarm that Donald Trump and his administration and the officials that he's appointed to lead these organizations, these federal departments, aren't following court orders. So, really, Congress? You're going to require a surety bond for a contempt ruling and thereby open up a possibility that a lawless, unbound, corrupt president, be she a current president or a future president, might just say, nah, we don't need those elections anymore. what the hell? I mean, where are we? That's Dave, such a great question that took me well over a minute, and I apologize.
Well, no, it's important, and I think we have to talk about it, because this is why a few Fridays ago, when Stephen Miller made the claim that, you know, they're looking at suspending habeas corpus, this is why this is a serious conversation. Because initially, with the passage of the big brutal bill, as we like to call it, and those types of comments, this felt like a precursor and a setup to what potentially might one day be just what you're talking. And you and I have had numerous conversations off the air and together about why there's so many implications of this bill, right? I mean, and we have focused on so much of how this is going to harm individuals, families, what's going to happen. But there is so much that's underlying in this bill that we haven't even touched upon yet. And we do have plans to try to get to some of that. This is a 1,000-page bill, though. We're never in a bazillion years going to be able to touch on every single part of it. But it's important conversations that I think people have to be aware of as we go further. So I love the question, Dave. Thank you so much for bringing that to us.
And I'll also say this bit of breaking news. It's being reported this hour that Attorney General sycophant, not constitutional scholar, Pam Bondi sent a letter to the president of the American Bar Association and has said that the ABA will no longer be permitted to review judicial nominees by Donald Trump. This has been one of the core functions of the American Bar Association for time in memoriam. The ABA is not a partisan organization. It's made up of Republicans, conservatives, libertarians, independents, nonpartisan people, Democrats, liberals, progressives, and people who couldn't care a whit about politics. The letter says the ABA no longer functions as a fair arbiter of nominees' qualifications. P.S. But Donald Trump does. I'm just saying, what? And Pam Bondi continues, its ratings invariably and demonstrably favor nominees put forth by Democratic administrations. I hate to say this, maybe because Democrats nominate actual qualified candidates. I'm just saying. And the last president to get a nominee rejected and bounced wasn't Donald Trump. It was Barack Obama. Just saying, as a point of clarification, now I'm talking about to the Supreme Court level. This is insane. While the ABA is free to comment on judicial nominations, no kidding, because that's the First Amendment, along with other, quote, activist organizations, there is no justification for treating the ABA differently from such other, quote, activist organizations, and the Department of Justice will not do so. Specifically, the Office of Legal Policy will no longer direct nominees to provide waivers, allowing the ABA access to non-public information, including bar records. What? Nominees will also not respond to questionnaires prepared by the ABA and will not sit for interviews with the ABA. Conservative lawyers across the country, you know this is wrong. And you know that Donald Trump's nominees to the bench are not qualified to sit on the bench any longer. He's not putting forward simply qualified conservative attorneys for judgeships. He has crossed through the looking glass. I'm sorry to go on during Ask Me Aggie, but this is, I know this as a lawyer, this is bananas. It's calling an organization that has served a critical oversight role an activist organization. The ABA is not an activist organization. Oh, Jamie, yeah. we just got the one really important question in.
But you know what? This is what Ask Maggie is for, right? These are not always topics we normally get to, but we do have to get to our free ticket Friday.
Friday. That is coming up. On the flip side, you are not going to want to go anywhere, because it's not just 4 free tickets in the club level to go watch the Brewers take on the San Diego Padres on June 7th at 6:40. It's also the Jackson Churio replica jersey free giveaway, so don't go anywhere. Your ticket and Free Ticket Friday word to win is coming up next. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Patience is rewarded, ladies and gentlemen. It is Free Ticket Friday. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every Friday this summer, nearly every Friday this summer, across each and every one of our network radio talk shows, starting with, of course, my friend Pat Kreitlow in the mornings from 6 to 9, Jane Matner and Greg Bach from 9 to 11, my good friend Todd Alba that's got the fine program before mine from 2 to 4 p.m., we are giving away Brewers tickets, four of them in each of those shows, almost every Friday in the summer. It's four tickets in Civic Media's beautiful club-level seats at AmFam Field. Today, right now, I'm about to give away four tickets to June 7th's showing of the Brewers versus the San Diego Padres, that game at 6:40 in the evening. Your word to win, you're going to want to text this via the Civic Media app. You send it in. Just doing the normal text and ain't going to qualify you to win. You're going to text in this word via the Civic Media app. You're going to get a bounce back text confirming that you've been entered. We draw the winners on Monday and Civic will be in touch. Here's your word, blue, as in Brewers blue, B-L-U-E. Blue is the word to win those four tickets. And it's also the Jackson Cheerio replica jersey giveaway night. If you want to be sure you get those, you got to get in line early to get into that game. They only go to the first 25,000 entering Brewers fans on Saturday, June 7th. The word to win today in Free Ticket Friday is blue, B-L-U-E, blue. Go get those tickets. Who knows? You might even see me at that game. I sometimes make a little special appearance because I basically can't get enough baseball. Thanks to all of my fine guests today, Jim Santel. You can find Jim's great program, Amicus, a law review, on Saturdays across the Civic Media Network from 9 to 11. Big thanks to Eva Wen, reporter from the Journal Sentinel, and of course, my senior producer, Jamie, and Jacob running the boards. Going into this weekend, here is my thought for all of you. Try to get outside. We are rolling into the summer. We only get a few days of this each year in Wisconsin, and you should get outside and enjoy Wisconsin's parks because it is Wisconsin's free fun weekend. This brought to you this article, this information by my colleague here at Civic Media, meteorologist Brittany Merlot. What is the free fun weekend? It is the 13th annual. It is June 7th to June 8th. So the same weekend as the Brewers tickets giveaway. So mark your calendar. There is no state park admission, no fishing license needed, no trail passes needed. It is a free fun weekend in Wisconsin state parks. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources wants to encourage all of us to get outside, hang out, and have some fun. Again, you can do this without paying a penny. You can go to any of our 50 state parks, 15 state forests, 44 state trails, and 84,000 miles of rivers and streams, and 15,000 inland lakes. Again, vehicle admission stickers not required. State parks and trails will be open from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. Amazing. There's going to be a pop-up sale at the Northern Highland American Legion State Forest on June 7th. You can check out all of the programs and events for this special weekend. Happens to be the same weekend of that Brewers tickets giveaway. Don't worry, there's tons of state parks in the Milwaukee area. You can find all of those events on the DNR events calendar. You can check out Brittany's amazing coverage of the Wisconsin Free Fun Weekend on the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us. I gotta ask you, Jacob, do you have a favorite state park?
In Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Is Devil's Lake a state park?
It sure is, my friend. That one counts.
I would have what to go with that one because that is beautiful, Maggie.
Yeah, what Wisconsinite doesn't love Devil's Lake? It's kind of one of those places like everybody's been to Devil's Lake at least once. That's one of my favorites. I also love Rochacree. I've been all over the Kettle Moraine State Forest, both the North Loop, the South Loop. Like, there's I don't know how many different Kettle Moraine State Forest parks they've got.
Are you a hiker, Maggie, or a kayaker? What's going on? I mean, how do you enjoy these parks?
Oh, my friend. I used to do a huge amount of hiking, like, picture, like, bring your water backpack kind of hiking, did the Grand Canyon with my dad.
Whoa.
Down and back up for his 60th birthday. My poor old knees do a little bit less of that. I'll do day hiking, but most of the time, my enjoyment of our beautiful state park and state park forest recreational opportunities here in Wisconsin are what I like to call car camping, where you drive all of your gear right onto your campsite. You just take it out of the car, set up camp. You're not schlepping things across the wilderness on your back and then setting up a tiny little tent because it was the lightest tent you could find. Oh no, friend. I'm talking queen size air mattress, full kitchen setup. Like, the idea is to conquer the elements with the least amount of effort possible.
That's the camping for me, Maggie. I admire you camping, hiking all the way into the Grand Canyon. I would be riding a burro down there myself. I don't think I'm walking that, but congratulations.
That's one
very
way
impressive.
To do it, my man. Listen, I'll just tell you this. When we got down to the base of the Grand Canyon, so there's the river, right? And there are were these like super luxury riverboat tour companies with like the gourmet chefs and these beautiful huge tents. I mean, it was like glamping before that was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd see them coasting by, setting up their camp. I walked over there. I was the one nominated from our hiking group. Can you go ask them for a couple of chairs? Because let me tell you, when you've been hiking, all you want is a back on the thing that you're sitting on. It is quite luxurious. Folks, whatever you're doing this weekend, please do enjoy yourself. Be safe out there. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. And have an excellent weekend. I'll be back with all of you on Monday. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Take care, y'all.
The national news cycle never stops. But it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.